Welcome to Bread and Roses. I'm your host, Leanne Kranz. That was Annie Humphrey with Spirit Horses. Tonight, we're talking about honoring the sovereignty of Indigenous nations, treaty rights, and sacred places. First, we'll hear from the Western Shoshone Nation. It may be news to you, as it was to me, that the Nevada test site is on Western Shoshone land. In the 1863 Treaty of Ruby Valley, the United States recognized the sovereignty of the Western Shoshone Nation and the full scope of their homelands, encompassing 60 million acres, including most of what is now called Nevada, parts of California, Idaho, and Utah. To this day, the government has yet to provide documentation of how the U.S. took ownership. There is no paper trail of the Western Shoshone ever ceding or deeding the land. However, in 1979, the U.S. proclaimed that the lands had been taken by, quote, gradual encroachment, a method of acquisition that has no legal statute in this country. The Western Shoshone have continually been denied fair access to U.S. courts to contest this title. Since the 1950s, the U.S. government has used Western Shoshone land to test over 900 nuclear weapons, making it the most bombed area on Earth. They've disposed of thousands of metric tons of radioactive waste and studied sacred Yucca Mountain as a national nuclear dump site. The land continues to be used for military testing, open pit gold mining, a method that involves grinding up entire mountains to extract gold particles. And the U.S. has engaged in seizures of Western Shoshone livestock, and there's ongoing armed surveillance of those who continue to assert their treaty rights. Today, June 23rd, was slated to be the latest detonation at the Nevada test site, a 700-ton bomb the U.S. Defense Department named Divine Strike. Though technically non-nuclear, critics believe the test is research into the development of low-yield nuclear weapons. The Western Shoshone filed a federal lawsuit. The test is in violation of not only their sovereignty, but also international law and the 2004 UN Non-Proliferation of Weapons of Mass Destruction resolution that President Bush initiated. In late May, amid citizen concerns, the test was postponed indefinitely. The Western Shoshone want it canceled. I am pleased to introduce at least one of my guests tonight, who has some exciting news to share about their recent victory in the United Nations. Hopefully our second guest will call in fairly soon, but it's my pleasure now to introduce Raymond Yowell, Chief of the Western Shoshone National Council, who has graciously agreed to join us because Carrie Dan could not make it after all. Thank you, Raymond, and welcome.
Yes, it's my pleasure.
Well, although Divine Strike has only been postponed, quote, indefinitely, I guess it's definitely worth taking a moment to celebrate. I want to thank you for all your efforts on that front. Are you aware of any updates about the plan?
The latest we have heard is that they're now planning sometime in this September. They haven't set a date yet, and they just kind of issued that general announcement.
Oh, my. Well, I know that you were not part of the delegation that officially went to Geneva to address the United Nations Committee for the Elimination of Racial Discrimination, but I'm sure you're aware of their finding. Would you be able to talk to us a little bit about what happened there?
Yes. Before we went over there, for probably over 50 years, we tried to solve the Western Shoshone situation that you described earlier within the United States, and within the United States system. Their governmental offices, Department of Interior, Department of Justice, and then also in their federal courts. We were not successful in this effort, and unfortunately, in 1951, a council, a Western Shoshone Indian council that had been created by the United States, filed a claim in what they call the United States Indian Claims Commission. And that claim proceeded down through the years until 1979. Now, the original government of the West Shoshone Nation opposed that claim right from the very beginning, stating that there was no need to file a claim because the land had not been taken.
Mm-hmm.
But were unsuccessful, you know, to try to persuade the federally created entity, you know, from filing that claim. That claim went through a lot of its steps, so-called land evaluations. One thing they couldn't find was a date of taking.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I guess they researched that quite a bit. And so they devised a scheme whereby they would say because the settlers had moved into within Shoshone territory, provided the taking.
The gradual encroachment.
Right, gradual encroachment.
Mm-hmm.
Even today, this year, 2006, there's probably only about 14% of the state of Nevada that's privately owned.
Hmm.
And that takes in the whole state, let alone the Shoshone area, which is in the least settled area.
Mm-hmm.
So gradual encroachment certainly hasn't happened if they only have private land of, 14%.
Right.
Anyway, that came to fruition in 1979, and in 1980, the United States government held what they call a hearing of record in Elko, which is in Shoshone country.
Mm-hmm.
That's the last thing that happens. And the people that came there, the West Shoshone that came there, after about the second or third testifier, asked the hearing officer a question by what U.S. law did you take the territory of the West Shoshone Nation? And the hearing officer couldn't answer that. And the gentleman that asked the question then said, well, you can keep your money then until you can show us how you took it. And from there on, every Shoshone that came up to testify asked that same question. When it couldn't be answered, he answered, rejected the claim. Basically, the Shoshone rejected the claim.
Mm-hmm.
And down through the years, we used that as a leverage against the United States to try to get him into negotiations, which we felt was probably the best way to move toward a solution to mm-hmm. the situation. We were unsuccessful, and finally, in 2003, well, beginning around 2001, 2002, 2003, there's an effort made by the Nevada delegation, congressional delegation, to get that money paid out. They seized upon a so-called vote that was not a majority vote at all, but just a fraction of the Shoshones. But since that event happened, the congressional delegation seized upon that as a reason that the Shoshones wanted to have their money, paid to them. The original government, the West Shoshone National Council, opposed this everywhere we possibly could,
mm-hmm.
and were unsuccessful. And in 2004, on July the 7th, after the both houses of the United States had passed the West Shoshone Distribution Act, the President of the United States signed it into law. We lost our leverage when that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And we discussed it among ourselves within the National Council and said basically, well, we can't do anything, internally, so now is the time to go international.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what precipitated the appearances over in Geneva with the Committee to Eliminate Racial Discrimination. And once we revealed the facts to them, they investigated it. And as maybe some of you know, they agreed with our position.
Wonderful. As I understand it, not only did they agree with you, but they issued a very strongly worded statement to the United States to cease, freeze, and stop any further destructive actions of military testing and open-pit gold mining on the land, calling it a violation of rights to health and spirituality.
Yes, that's very true. And we were a little bit surprised when that happened, but we're certainly very appreciative that it happened because, like I said, it proves on the international scene what we've been saying for many, many years here.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Wonderful. I understand that, you know, although the United Nations does not have an enforcement arm to make the United States respond to this, I understand that it's still a very significant first step toward indigenous sovereignty, not only in the U.S., but globally.
Yes, that is very true. It's been a slow-moving, event on the international scene, but as the years go by, the indigenous of the world have achieved, some success and continue to, move forward in a successful way.
Mm-hmm.
We're certainly very appreciative of that. Basically said the same things we were saying. Gradual encroachment is not a way to take land.
Mm-hmm. Well, it is a breath of hope, because if it's now on the books, it is written on the books that the United States, our laws and our policies are out of compliance with the human rights laws of the world, and that, the U.S., our reach is global. Our policies and practices impact people all over the world. So perhaps we can, perhaps this will have a large-scale impact on the ability of indigenous people to have a say in their own development and control their own communal lands, territories, and resources. So congratulations. I wish you the best with that.
Yes, thank you. Well, certainly, the United States has proclaimed in the past, and I guess continues to proclaim, to be a great enforcer, of human rights, around the world.
Oh, yes,
and here now they have been found to be in violation internally.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be an embarrassment to them, even though, like you stated, the UN does not have enforcement capability.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be an embarrassment for them from now on to have this ruling against them. And I think that the indigenous of the world is going to, seize this ruling and counter the United States in whatever it tries to do, within their nations. I know many indigenous nations, have a great human rights concern. I mean, people are getting killed in some places,
mm-hmm.
That's a terrible thing.
Absolutely. Well, it's the first time the United Nations has issued a full decision against the U.S. in respect to our highly controversial federal Indian law and policy. And many people listening right now might not be aware that our current Indian policy in this country is based on a document that was from the Columbus era, Christopher Columbus, that is. It's called the Doctrine of Discovery, and it is the basis of our constitutional law in regard to indigenous people of North America. Raymond, are you able to talk about this Doctrine of Discovery?
Sure.
Okay.
Basically, that was a gentleman's agreement among the European powers at that time upon the discovery of the so-called New World, that they would not override or not interfere with other nations' land claims in the New World.
Mm-hmm.
If some other nation from Europe had landed in a certain place and claimed that, then no other nation, could claim it for them. They would respect each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that became known as the Discovery Doctrine. And I think the Catholic Church, from all that I've been able to find out, is the initiator of that.
Mm-hmm.
Beginning back in 1493, when they issued a papal bull, basically saying the same thing that they had said I think it was 1353 in regards to the indigenous people of Africa. At that time, the church ruled that the natives were like animals and they did not have a soul. So therefore, it was okay to take their property, because mm-hmm. they were heathens and not Christians. That was a big thing.
Right.
And in 1493, the same thing was issued regarding the so-called New World. And that, you know, proceeded forth with Spain and France and England and various other European countries, you know, coming to the New World and claiming land here.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, when the United States broke free from England and established its own nation, they based the ruling, I think it was 1823, Justice Marshall of the Supreme Court issued that ruling based upon the discovery principle, saying that the discoverer, you know, had the right to mm-hmm. take the land, and even though it was still, you know, held by the natives, even though the natives were upon the land, it was okay for them to take it.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, I'm just kind of, you know, putting it in simple terms. He goes into more detail than that, but basically, he put forth the discovery doctrine. Now, there are two things that I see wrong with that. One is the United States claims to be a nation that the church and the state are separate. They're not together.
Mm-hmm.
When the court ruled upon the discovery principle, coming from the Christian view of the Catholic Church, they combined the church and the state, you know, mm-hmm. in the affairs of the young United States. And then the second thing that I see wrong with that is a court cannot make law. They are there to interpret law
mm-hmm.
and to enforce law, but they are not there to make law. And down through the years, that's what Indian law is based upon, is the ruling of Justice Marshall.
Mm-hmm.
And they expanded it, you know, quite a bit. Trusteeship sprung from that. You know, we're like little children.
Right.
We need to have a trustee to oversee, you know, our affairs.
Mm-hmm.
And even in that role, the United States has failed what it laid out what it would do as a trustee.
Mm. They didn't.
Well, that's my view of how this came about.
You know, that's just shocking. I understand that when the Western Shoshone Defense Project made it very clear that current Indian policy is based on this doctrine of discovery, this thought that Christian nations have the divine right to claim land and authority over indigenous people because the Pope said so.
Right.
I've heard that once that's been publicized more recently, that the Western Shoshone Defense Project has been hearing from outraged Christians. So they're
mm-hmm.
they're finding allies where they might not have expected to. Yes, it's
yes, I guess when the truth is revealed to them, they can really understand, you know, what happened, you know, down through the years.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because when the treaties, initially, when the fledgling United States was making treaties with the various nations, there was no need for trustee. They were dealing with leaders of that nation. Well, usually, I know sometimes there were propped up puppet leaders in a sense, but initially it seemed that, you know, they really did try to work with the leaders, but suddenly in 1776, that all changes and Indians are seen as childlike in nature and in need of stewardship. It's just incredibly insulting.
Yes, the balance of power shifted actually later than 1776.
Mm-hmm.
It was probably around 1850, maybe 1860.
Mm-hmm.
A little earlier than that in the east, but as the settlements moved to the west, the balance of power shifted from the native nations outnumbering, you know, American citizens to the American citizens beginning to outnumber natives.
Mm-hmm.
And when the balance of power shifted, then that's when, one of the things, they quit making treaties in, 1871.
Mm-hmm.
No more treaties after 1871. And that's kind of where the balance of power began to shift. They became mightier military-wise than the native nations, you know, within these lands.
Mm. Well, Raymond, we have about 5 minutes left. And I wondered, I heard you interviewed on WBAI not too long ago. And you spoke about how the U.S. actions on Western Shoshone land have impacted the Western Shoshone people and the plant life and the land. Would you please tell us what it is like to live on your ancestral lands that we have been abusing for the last 50 years?
Well, things have changed even in my short lifetime. You know, the plants that used to be around, both edible and medicinal, mm-hmm. Is no longer here. Or if some of it is here, it's very, very reduced. Mm-hmm. You know, there's not very many. You mentioned the test site, you know, where they tested the atomic bombs. Mm-hmm. That area was our place to go to get medicines and herbs. There's things that grow down there that grew no place else. And, of course, when President Truman set that up as a bombing range in 1948, we were no longer able to go in there to gather, you know, the medicines and the herbs that we needed.
I heard that if you did try to cross, quote, trespass, that they issued fines within the millions of dollars. Is that true?
Well, I've never heard that. I know that we started going down there in the mid-80s, mm-hmm. mid-1980s, joining the other non-nuclear protesters, you know, mm-hmm. people that didn't like nuclear, you know, mm-hmm. Exploration and bombs. Mm-hmm. And we were arrested many times for, you know, like you said, for trespassing.
Mm-hmm.
But we were never fined, and we were ticketed. Yeah. But we were never taken to court.
Good.
And the one thing that we did with the protesters was that we issued them a certificate that gave them permission for 1 year to come and go on Shoshone territory. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, stopped a lot of the the non-Shoshone that may have gone to court. Once that certificate was given to them and they showed it in court, it never went further than that.
Right.
Even though I think there was a couple of cases that they did, maybe four or five cases where they did sentence people and people ended up serving a little bit of jail time.
Wow.
But the majority, they never pushed sometimes there was like 1,000, 1,500. I think the biggest demonstration had was like 2,000 down there, you know, back during those times.
Mm-hmm. I understand that during those years of testing, that one of your main traditional foods, the pinyon trees, pine nuts, that I understand that the crops were impacted during that time.
Yes, yes, it certainly were. Prior to the testing beginning in the nuclear stuff around 1950 and maybe into the early 1950s, the pine nut crop began to be less and less, and finally, into the 60s and 70s, it was non-existent for a number of years. There was no pine nuts, and in some places it would just be a few, very few, not like the heavy crops prior to the testing. So we felt that the radiation fallout, you know, had a lot to do with, that crop.
You know, I've heard that currently if we stopped all testing now, that plutonium will be hazardous in your ancestral homelands for the next 12,000 generations.
And oh, yes, easy that. And some of that stuff is there for 50,000 years. The half-life is 50,000 years.
I've heard that uranium will be contaminating the area for the next million years.
Yes, I would say that's probably true.
Wow.
And, exposure to that, you don't know. You don't know when you're zapped.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we feel that normal aging diseases, mm-hmm. heart failure, kidney failure, you know, stomach problems, lung failure, those kind of things, are speeded up by exposure to that radiation. And, people that might have had another 10, maybe 20 years of their life, it's shortened by that amount by having been exposed to radiation at some time, you know, in their life.
Mm-hmm. I understand there are high rates of cancer and other organ problems among the Western Shoshone?
There's been a higher incidence of cancer to prior nuclear testing.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to nuclear testing, it was very, very few. You know, an individual here, an individual there.
Mm-hmm.
But since the testing, there has been more and more cases, more cancer cases, and more liver failures, heart failures. lung problems that, as I recall in my youth in the 1930s and 1940s, those diseases weren't very, you know, might have been a case or two here and there, but certainly not the way that it started after the testing began.
Well, I certainly hope that this recent UN finding and the public awareness that's hopefully spreading will help make life better for you. And thank you so
much. One last thing I'd like to say is that we have sent a letter to the delegation, to the United States delegation that was there in Geneva that represented the United States, and we requested a meeting with them to begin a dialogue on the situation. And they have not responded. We got a letter back from the team that was in Geneva that they had forwarded our letter to the appropriate agencies.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't know which appropriate agency it is, but they have not responded to us, our request for a meeting on the issue.
Well, I certainly hope they do. And I'd like to encourage folks, if they would like more information about what's going on, please check out the Western Shoshone Defense Project website, www.wsdp.org. A number to call is 775-468-0230. Raymond, thank you so much for being my guest tonight and for all that you're doing.
Yes, you're very welcome.
Wish you the best. Thank you.
Thank you.
And now we're going to take a little musical break.
Remember the times that you have held your head high. Hold on your friends of your Indian claim. Proud good lady and proud good man. Some great big grandfather from Indian blood sprang. And you feel in your heart for these ones. Oh, it's written in books and in songs. If we've been mistreated and wronged, over and over I hear those same words from you, good lady, and you, good man. Well, listen to me if you care where we stand, and you feel you're a part of these ones. When a war between nations is lost, the loser we know pays the cost. But even when Germany fell to your hands, consider, dear lady, consider, dear man, you left them their pride and you left them their land. And what have you done to these ones? Has a change about, my dear man, or are you still taking our lands? A treaty forever your senators sign. Say you, dear lady, say you, dear man. And the treaties are broken again and again. And what will you do for these ones? Oh, the past they will say, but it's still going on here today. The government's now on the Navajo land, down on the Inuit and the Cheyenne. It's here and it's now, you can help us, dear man, now that the buffalo's gone.
That was Buffy St. Marie with Now That the Buffalo Is Gone. You're listening to Bread and Roses, and I'm your host, Leanne Kranz. Next, we'll hear from Defend Bear Butte, an intertribal coalition of over 30 Great Plains nations formed to protect their sacred mountain from the construction of what's being touted as the world's largest biker bar. Defend Bear Butte has an excellent website. And here are some words that I'd like to share with you from that site. I wish it were possible for us Indian people to tell the world how much sacred places mean to us. To explain that no man-made cathedral or mansion can inspire within us the feelings of sacredness inspired by those places generations of our grandparents worshipped. At no place is the culture gulf that separates the European and indigenous people greater than in our native regard for this land's sacred places. What we gaze upon with reverence, they look at with greedy calculation. Bear Butte is sacred to us. Bear Butte is where we pray and fast. Bear Butte is home to the spirits. We have told them this since the very first Euro came among us. Those are the words of Carter Camp, co-coordinator of Defend Bear Butte. To give you an idea of the importance of this mountain, that perhaps you can relate to, Bear Butte is where, in 1876, Sitting Bull gathered over 6,000 Indian people to urge them to protect sacred lands, where Crazy Horse told them they couldn't sell the land of their ancestors. People remember these words. In all the treaties, the Lakota and Cheyenne nations were careful to protect the Black Hills and Bear Butte, but these treaties were broken before the ink was dry. Today, the Black Hills are a tourist attraction, and Bear Butte, a state park that is managed as such. The nations are granted some religious privileges, but even these are now greatly threatened by the planned construction of this biker bar, which also includes a very large campground and concert venue. Imagine the sounds of Lynyrd Skynyrd competing with prayers and ceremonies. Despite Indian and citizen protests, Meade County commissioners voted unanimously this April to grant a liquor license to the developer Jay Allen for $500,000. Meade County currently has no zoning laws, and five other biker-oriented complexes are in the works near Bear Butte. Carter Camp calls this latest assault an act of cultural genocide that will destroy a big part of Great Plains culture, and it's happening all over the United States. Now, federal legislation does exist to protect sacred sites, but it is not enforced. The American Indian Religious Freedom Act has never won against property rights. Native spirituality, though in existence here for thousands of years, is not given the same credence as other religions protected by the Constitution. So this summer, traditional people of the Great Plains Nations have organized a big gathering to show Meade County that they are very serious about protecting sacred sites. They've also invited traditional leaders from all of the Americas and all of us, including bikers, who understand and support the idea that some areas should be protected from human encroachment. And now it is my pleasure to introduce Deborah Whiteplume, the director of Defend Bear Butte. Welcome, Deborah.
Hello, Leanne.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight. Now, this gathering is actually a long encampment spanning all the way from, as I understand it, July 4th through the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally, which ends August 13th. And there are many important things happening during that time, that span of time. Can you tell us more about all that you have planned?
Sure. We'll have our opening ceremonies on July 4th.
I'm sorry, Deborah, do you mind speaking up just a little bit?
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. On July 4th, we'll have our opening ceremonies, and at that time, there will be many different indigenous nations from all over North America, as well as our relatives from South America. At the opening ceremonies, we will be doing a reclaiming of our sacred mountain, and I foresee many, many people coming there from the context that we've had.
Great.
across the country. We will be having our spiritual leaders there. Our medicine men will be there.
Mm-hmm.
And our elders, our matriarchs, our chiefs, not only of the Lakota nations, but of many other nations as well. The Northern Cheyenne people, who also hold Bear Butte as a sacred mountain, their spiritual leaders are making arrangements to meet with our Chief Red Cloud and smoke a pipe with him. So that's a really important thing that's going to be happening to open the camp.
I understand that you're going to do a making of allies ceremony between the nations. And I understand that this makes me cry, that you haven't done this for 200 years, that it's you're going to renew that ceremony.
Right.
That's wonderful.
Yes, we need to do those things to pull our people together into an organized resistance of the desecration of our sacred places. We're not the only indigenous people who are faced with desecration of sacred places. And so we need to do this with other indigenous people. And on August 1 through 4, we will be having a sacred site summit for indigenous nations. And at this time, we will strategize to come up with a collective action that we can, how we can help each other.
In this summit of indigenous leadership, as I understand it, is it true that this is where you invited leaders from all of the Americas to participate?
Right.
Yes, I understand you hope to execute treaties of peace and friendship among the nations to work
Yes, we will. We have some of our treaty people, as well as international attorneys, working with us right now to draft these documents. And then we'll register them with the UN this fall.
Wonderful. Yes, I understand that the hope is that you all, that even if there is a victory at Bear Butte, that the awareness is that it's not going to stop there. The United States is going to keep encroaching on indigenous land, and the hope is that with this summit, you can all become of one mind and work together to thwart this sort of encroachment throughout the globe.
That's right. That's right, because to our people, the entire Black Hills is a sacred place.
Mm-hmm.
Bear Butte is just one of the places inside of the Black Hills.
Mm-hmm.
Each of these places are part of our identity as Lakota people. So for us, it's really like a final defense, because if they wipe out our sacred places, they wipe out the Lakota nation, because our way of life is interwoven with these sacred places, and our identity as Lakota people includes Mother Earth, it includes creation. So for us, this final defense is an organized resistance to the desecration. We have our human right. We have our inalienable right to pray at Bear Butte.
Mm-hmm.
We learn our way of life there. We receive healing there. And this predates Sturgis. It predates the motorcycle rally. It predates South Dakota. Mm-hmm. It predates America, and it predates Columbus.
Yes, it does.
And yeah, so, you know, what our problem is in understanding, and it's a clash of cultures and a clash of values, it's like, why does the Meade County Commission and why do these business developers expect us to willingly give up our destiny?
Absolutely.
And you know, they've made comments like, it's real inconvenient for the rally for us to be trying to pray up there during the rally. Why can't we pray at a different time of year?
I'm sorry to laugh. That is not funny.
Yeah, it is. It's ludicrous. It's ludicrous, and it's their inability and their ignorance to look at us as a people with a way of life that is different from theirs. Our way of life is based on the star nation and the changing of seasons. Where the stars are where the sun rises at a certain time of year, we have to be at a certain place on Earth performing a ceremony at that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how we live our life, and so we need these sacred places to be who we are. And they would prefer to have their motorcycle rally without a bunch of Indians raising a ruckus about their rally. It's inconvenient for them. They've stated that.
And, you know, listeners, please keep in mind, we're talking about destroying cultures for our wild vacations. You know, what's wrong with our value system? I don't understand. Well, you mentioned, Deborah, the star knowledge. I understand that during the month of July, while the encampment's going on, you have lots of activities for youth to make sure that they are aware
right.
of the importance. Do you mind talking about what you have planned for the youth?
Well, we have different learning experiences planned, and they all have the goal of reconnecting people with the ancient way of life
mm-hmm.
that has been, you know, adversely affected by the, I guess, capitalism of the Black Hills. You know, the whole Black Hills is a tourist attraction, and Bear Butte is a tourist, or not Bear Butte, but Sturgis is a tourist attraction
mm-hmm.
that has most recently sprawled out toward and to include the area immediately around Bear Butte. So what we want to do and what we plan on doing with the children all the way up to elders is having a lot of different teachings going on by our spiritual leaders, our medicine people, and our treaty people, and in reconnecting people with this knowledge.
That's wonderful. I understand that you have also had some support from bikers that would typically go to Sturgis. Can you tell us how the bikers are getting involved in educating their community?
Well, the bikers that we're in touch with understand our position
mm-hmm.
with Bear Butte as a sacred place, and some of them are not even going to go to the rally at all.
They're boycotting it?
As a way to support, you know, our stand that Bear Butte needs to be respected like any other church or synagogue or hospital or school.
Mm-hmm.
Other bikers will come to the Sturgis rally, but they will not come out to the establishments that are near Bear Butte.
Mm-hmm.
The only things near Bear Butte are bars, saloons, pornography places, racetracks for motorcycles, concert amphitheaters. You know, that's what's out there. And the people of Sturgis, the city of Sturgis, and the people of Meade County, there's really a lot of them who have joined our position, which says we want a buffer zone around Bear Butte because we need this peace and quiet year-round.
Is that a
including the 2 weeks of the rally, you
mm-hmm,
know?
Mm-hmm.
And what they're saying is that Sturgis used to be a farm ranch community town. Over the years, the motorcycle rally has squeezed out these farm ranch implement businesses and community businesses until now the major employers besides city government and the Fort Meade Old Soldiers Home is the motorcycle rally.
Mm.
So in essence, they've created a dependency.
Mm-hmm.
People depend on these places to get a job for a month out of the year. Without realizing that these businesses that cater to the rally, they've squeezed out the other businesses that used to give them jobs year-round.
Mm-hmm.
So now, like at the Jay Allen alcohol application hearing, there were 1,000 people opposing that application. There were 5 people in support of it. Those 5 people were all on his payroll. And the Meade County Commissioner said that after all of this testimony, that there was no reason for them to deny the application.
Especially getting $500,000 in the bargain.
Right, $500,000 for the new license fee.
So
there's roughly 6,000 residents mm-hmm. in Meade County.
Mm-hmm.
There's over 60 bars and liquor stores.
Oh, my gosh.
And most of them are only open during the motorcycle rally, and most of them are owned by people who don't even live in South Dakota.
Right, Jay Allen, I know, the developer of this mega bar, he doesn't live there. He has no stake in that area except financial.
Right, he's from Florida. He's got Broken Spoke Saloons in four other states.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you're hoping for a 5-mile buffer zone around Bear Butte?
Well, we're saying reasonable.
Reasonable.
We're saying reasonable. Some folks are saying 7 miles, some are saying five, some mm-hmm. are saying four, some are saying two. At this point, we're saying reasonable. And the South Dakota Association of Christian Churches have come on board with that and support the idea of a buffer zone.
Mm-hmm.
So has the Sturgis City Council of Ministries, all the churches in the city of Sturgis. There's a lot of political action groups in South Dakota, mm-hmm. South Dakota Peace and Justice, South Dakota Audubon Society, that these are all, you know, non-Indian groups.
Mm-hmm.
Who have joined our call to action to protect Bear Butte.
Wonderful.
You know, either as a demonstration of support for our human rights to pray there, or because they're environmentalists. You know, they have their reasons, too, because mm-hmm. Bear Butte is a state park,
mm-hmm.
and it's a national historic site, and right across the highway is Bear Butte Lake, which is the only natural lake in the whole Black Hills. All the other lakes are man-made.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wildlife refuge.
Mm-hmm. I've been there. It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
It kills me to think of 30-foot speakers and strippers and who knows what else.
Right.
Oh, my gosh. Well, Deborah,
that would never happen around a synagogue. It would never happen around a church. It would never happen at a hospital or a school.
Very good points.
Yeah, this is it's happening right here in South Dakota, and you know we're starting to look at what is the governor's role in this. Why has he failed to heed this turmoil that's going on in one of the biggest counties in the state?
Yeah, I heard South Dakota hasn't done anything.
They haven't. Well, Game Fish and Parks of South Dakota back in the 80s were contemplating creating the buffer zone through the Game Fish and Parks Department, purchasing land that became available on the market
mm-hmm.
in the immediate vicinity of Bear Butte as a way for the state to create a buffer zone.
Mm-hmm.
And that just died out. I'm not sure what happened to it, but we're looking into that also. And we're looking into creating a land conservancy.
Mm-hmm.
So that as land does become available on the market, we can raise money to purchase it. And by that way, create our own buffer zone.
I wish you the best. You guys will be in my heart and thoughts that entire 6 weeks. And I think I would like to, you know, if any Pacific Northwesterners are planning to head to this a historic gathering, please bring smoked salmon. I understand Carter Camp specifically would like some smoked salmon.
Mm-hmm.
Deborah, I want to thank you so much for your time tonight. And if you contact me, if you have updates, I'd be happy to try to get those on the air here.
Yes, I'll do that, Leanne. Thank you.
Thank you.
All of your support and your interest.
Thank you very much. For those interested, there's a great website. It's www.defendbearbutte.org. There's lots of information there on how to help. It's a grassroots effort, folks. So remember, they need our support and money. Well, I have a few closing thoughts here. The topic we talked tonight with the Western Shoshone Nation, Raymond Yowell, the chief of the Western Shoshone National Council. We heard from the Intertribal Coalition supporting Defend Bear Butte. But the ongoing theft of indigenous land affects us all. I'm going to quote Julie Fischel from the Western Shoshone Defense Project. This isn't just about Indians. It's about everybody. It's about land, clean water, clean air, and the protection of significant areas. This is about not allowing the U.S. government to place corporate interests before human rights and environmental concerns. These are human issues, folks. So I must ask you, my fellow Americans, what kind of nation are we? What will our legacy be to future generations, to the earth? What kind of neighbor are we at home and abroad? Is our pursuit of happiness just a misguided sense of entitlement for our life of consumption, waste, and short-sighted comfort? Is our American dream just another form of manifest destiny? Or will we own up to our past, make it right, and move forward in a better way? We must ask ourselves what we, the people, truly want. Remember, we outnumber those in power. I've heard it said that the true laws that we should be honoring are what's best for the land, air, water, and sun. L-A-W-S. These are the, quote, laws that should guide our every action, not gold and oil. I want to thank you all for listening tonight. We're going to go out with a song and leave it to the white woman to play the Indigo Girls version of Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee, but here it goes. Good night, everybody.
We're going to do a song that we learned is written by Buffy St. Marie. It's called Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee.
Indian legislation's on the desk of a do-right congressman. He don't know much about the issues, so he picks up the phone and asks the advice of the senator out in Indian country, a darling of the energy companies. They're ripping off what's left of the reservation. I learned a safety rule. I don't know who to thank. Don't stand between the reservation and the corporate bank. They're sending federal tanks. It isn't nice, but it's reality.